head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs, or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Helping you get to the back end of the work week. Welcome to the Hump Show on After Hours.
Hope that this cute little ditty helps you feel better about
Hump Day.
You're heading into it. We're actually in the midst of ours. Wednesday becomes so much easier when you start with our show and all of our goofiness. We're going to get you over the hump.
Getting you to the good half of your week. It's the Hump Show on After Hours.
Yeah, yeah, it is the Hump Show, middle show of the work week, and keeping you company, whether you are wrapping up your late night, your second shift, maybe you're out late, you're driving, you're working overnight. I hope that the majority of you are not waking up already first thing on your Wednesday morning, because that would hurt. But whatever your sitch, we've got you. If you have some extraordinary circumstances, maybe vacation, maybe a little bit out of your routine, that's what summer is all about, right? Maybe it's the Olympics that are keeping you awake. I'm glad that you're hanging out with us on our Hump Show, middle show of the work week. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So we're going to talk Major League Baseball trade deadline, the teams that made move, the teams that did not. In the meantime, love for you to find me online, our different accounts, whether it's Twix at Amy After Hours or on our Facebook page very soon, a spot where you can ask Amy anything. So that will come up next hour here on the show. So mixing and matching with the Olympics, and we'll have some football as well, and then also baseball, because there were some late moves to wonder what the impacts and the ripple effects will be coming up as we head through the remainder of the season. And there are some tight races, mostly wild cards. And then you've got the AL West, the AL East, that are still relatively tight too. And we're pleased to welcome Maury Brown, who's a longtime baseball insider, looking at the business side of things for the trade deadline and is now with Forbes. And Maury, I saw that you put on your Twix a poll for fans to answer about this trade deadline. Was it good? Was it so-so? Was it bad? So I'd love to hear your answer to that question. How would you rate it?
Well, I personally thought it was great for a number of reasons. There are very distinct buyers and sellers. I mean, and from that means there's some parity issues in Major League Baseball. The only thing saving it right now was the addition of growing the wild card. I think the wild card has just made it to where there are teams that would normally in a division race just bow out. They have become more interested in doing that. And so that has allowed clubs that are not performing well, certainly the Chicago White Sox lead that list right now, and others to go ahead and retool with their prospects. And it was a pretty aggressive market. So in that sense, I thought it was good. And then, of course, at the end, the Dodgers swooped in and kind of did stuff right at the very end of the deadline. I thought generally it was interesting. I really do. I thought it was pretty good.
So Jack Flaherty had been connected to a couple of other teams like the Yankees in the rumors and the pre-deadline reports. As you point out, the Dodgers end up adding him. They've actually really struggled with their starting rotation this year, not having a lot of consistency there. So how do you like the addition of Flaherty?
Well, I think the thing that everybody needs to think about on this was the thing with the Yankees was a lot closer than I think people gave credit for. The only thing that stopped them from making it happen in New York was, I think there was concerns with his back. Now, nobody's going to talk about it, but it sounds like they backed out at pretty much the 11th hour, which opened up the door for the Dodgers. If the Dodgers had done nothing, it would have been like, okay, what's going on? You guys have, once again, will be like an NLDS loser, you know, losing the first round. And that is something that has just plagued them. I mean, they've run ramshot in the National League multiple years in a row. And with 2020, the exception, they just seem to get hit on the chin once the playoffs hit. Now, look, I understand the playoffs add a lot of the idea that in a short series, anything can happen. It just really opens things up. But still, a team that spends that much, a team that has been that dominant, should probably do better. So, look, I think it's good. You know, I mean, there are some questions. You know, Clayton Kershaw came back, and that's, you know, something. Although he has, of course, been questionable, and he's not exactly young anymore. So, yes, I think they needed to do something.
The Padres were able to find themselves a new closer, and they bring in Tanner Scott, maybe the best reliever that was available on the market. How great is the gap between the Dodgers and the Padres?
The biggest issue with that whole design was they really needed help in the front of the rotation, and the rotation needed help. I mean, yes, it's great additions to their bullpen. But I guess if you're going to go ahead and say, well, you know, we can go ahead and augment and stretch our bullpen out with these additions, okay. But I was surprised. I thought maybe they would go for somebody on the front line. They didn't. They went into the reliever market, which was really, the market was exceptionally high for relievers this year. And so I was kind of surprised about that. I mean, they traded quite a bit away. So I guess it'll be interesting to see how they balance that out. Did they do well enough to just solidify second place? Maybe.
Right now, they've won 8 of their last 10, including extra inning victory over the Dodgers in front of a sold-out crowd tonight. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, looking at the baseball trade deadline with Maury Brown, who is a senior contributor for Forbes. It's kind of interesting to think about the last week and what the Tampa Bay Rays have done. And at the point at which they traded Randy Arozarena to the Mariners, they were only one game above 500 and yet still very much in that wild card mix that you talked about at the start. Why do you think they went ahead and just dealt all these pieces?
Yeah, and this is the question. Anybody that would look at it, basically the way that you framed it, Amy, I think that you look at it and you go, what is going on? You guys are right there, which again speaks to how wide open the wild card has made the playoffs. But I can't argue with the fact that they have been in this thing and been competitive largely since 2006, doing it on a method of going through and retooling. And they're able to do and remain competitive along the way. Now, look, they moved a lot. I was surprised. You mentioned Randy Arozarena, Jason Adams, Eflin. I mean, you go through and you say, well, that's quite a bit that you're offloading. But they do really believe in the prospects that they got back. And the bad thing about that, Amy, is you can't really tell. You know, you're never really going to know until next season how that's going to pan out and what they're going to do in the offseason. But I will say this, until they prove people wrong, I mean, they've largely been competitive in a hyper-competitive division for a long time. I mean, it's not for the fact that the Orioles finally, you know, got around to being competitive after being in abysmal shape for the better part of over a decade. Then I would say it's hard to argue with them. So I guess we'll wait and see. Yeah, I mean, if you're a Rays fan, you're going, you guys are right there. You know, you're looking at a small window to get into the wild card. But then it's harder to leap over some people or some teams in the middle of this thing.
And on the heels of that, they get the government backing they need for a big stadium and to stay put there in the area.
When the $1 billion arrive, it's one of those things. You know, they do get the backing. The Rays have been trying for a long time. And this is something, Amy, that I think gets largely lost. You know, it took the Marlins 20 years. It took the Twins about 20 years. It's taken the A's and the Rays longer. And it is, I think, a testament to the idea that the public's not really keen on trying to get into supporting private industry that much anymore. I think they're a lot more educated than they used to be. That said, I have said repeatedly, and in speak, I 5 years ago, I spoke to Rob Manfred, and he opened up the door to the idea of expansion. Hmm. He's not going to get it on his watch. He's going to set it up for whoever is the next commissioner if he follows through with his retirement plan. And so that's a big deal. I mean, when we go to 32 teams, I think that that's a significant thing. And the A's and the Rays are those linchpins. Until those two are sorted out, expansion doesn't happen. And given the fact that there will be a $2 billion, potentially more, expansion fee for each of the two teams, there are 30 teams right now in Major League Baseball with 4 billion reasons to try and get the A's and Rays over the finish line.
And the Rays' proposal is for a $1.3 billion ballpark that would guarantee the team stays in place there for at least 30 years, which is pretty significant, as you point out, Maury. Something that I love seeing, though, is that the Pittsburgh Pirates actually added pieces as opposed to getting rid of pieces. What do their moves signal to you?
Well, again, this is the wild card. You know, first of all, they have the most electric starter in baseball right now. I mean, it's really one of those things to where I look at them. So they pick up De La Cruz, you know, they pick up, you know, Kiner Falefa, and that, I think, really helped them, along with a prospect in York. So, they were looking to upgrade without, you know, removing too much. And this is always the fine balancing act, right? And the Pirates have not historically been very deep. They've not done well historically. And they're in a bit of a position right now where they do have some pieces where they're starting to build that sort of thing back. So there it is. Are you going to rob your future to try and make something happen now? And they were able to balance that. That's always the key. I mean, a sign of a good front office is the ones where they can go ahead, they can get some pieces that can move the needle, and they don't mortgage their future. And I don't think the Pirates did that. I thought actually that this time around, while it wasn't, you know, anywhere in the ballpark of what some others have did, they did do something. And I will say this, you know, until I go to the grave, you know, a lot of people would get down on the Padres, right, for the fact that they've over leveraged themselves. They just seem to be diving into this thing, and their window probably isn't terribly long. I thought that their window was closing up this offseason, and here they are still going for it. In what universe do we not want to have our teams trying to win? Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be out there trying to be on the margins to make money. They should try and be competitive. So, you know, finally, I tip my hat to the Pirates for doing something. I've been down on them for so many years.
Right.
And, I thought that they did something well.
Mm, and they are hanging in. They're above 500, and both they and the Cardinals are within six of the top there with the Brewers in the NL Central. So just out of curiosity, Maury, what do you think they should do with that dynamic pitcher who is must-see TV in Paul Skenes when it comes to, I don't know, his future, whether immediate or distant?
Yeah, this is the problem with pitchers, right? I mean, There have been others that have been out there that have come along and have shown incredible brilliance. I mean, I can go back to Mark Price if you want to go really far back into the history books and look at it. And then they flame out, or somebody gets figured out. Now, you know, I think that he will probably not be that guy. But the thing, Amy, I think that's a real concern across Major League Baseball is that, you know, we get this conversation, old schoolers who go, well, you know, Nolan Ryan or Bob Gibson or whatever, they would, you know, pitch complete games. And, you know, it's a completely different animal now. They're throwing with all the gas that they have in the tank and with an incredible amount of spin. And that has increased pitcher injuries dramatically. And I think that, again, clubs are exceptionally wary of that. You know, they're not going to put him on a leash right now. He's so dynamic. Why would you?
Right.
But I think that it'll be interesting to see. You know, let him ride out the season. Let him go. Let him go all the way and go out with it. Right. And evaluate how he is in the offseason and how he comes back. Sometimes, you know, sometimes the opposition starts to scout them a little bit better when it's somebody new. Right. Pitchers or the batters take a little bit longer to catch up with really dynamic pitchers. But I love it. Again, I'm going to get back to this thing with the Pirates. They finally, the stars aligned. Like the, You know, they're not in the boat yet of the Orioles, right, where it finally all came together. But it gives fans in Pittsburgh some hope, and it's a club that I think largely deserves, or a market and fan base that deserves to have that.
Not just that, but one of the best ballparks in the majors. Man, I love PNC Park. It's terrific.
You know, it's at the top of the list. That's what they've been living on for so many years is, hey, we suck, but come out to the ballpark. Now they at least have a decent, you know, something decent in the works.
Mm. So that's the Pittsburgh Pirates. We know the Kansas City Royals have a history to them as well, but got to be a bit of a surprise this season. Now, 10 games above 500. What impresses you about them and how they're hanging out?
Yeah, I mean, they added some bullpen pieces, which I think that they needed, right? They're surprising. Maybe the most surprising team in this. I don't think that everybody sat there at the beginning of the season and thought that they would be hanging around at this point. And again, Amy, one of the things that I like seeing now as opposed to, I mean, look, there's still big market teams have resources and therefore they have a lot more bandwidth to make. They can make mistakes and make corrections with them. But we continue to see some clubs that are on the periphery in smaller markets that are able to pull some stuff together. I don't know how long it's sustainable, but that is the thing that you want to see. I mean, it's Rob Manfred, so you take this for what it is. But the commissionership has largely stated, and Rob Manfred has said it to me directly, and before this it was Bud Selig, they want to see clubs in a five-year cycle. At the very least, every club said it should be at some point where they have momentum every 5 years to be competitive, no matter whether you're the Dodgers or the Royals. So, look, I mean, the more that we see this kind of thing, the healthier it is for the game. And if I look at attendance, yes, I know the rule changes have made it a lot more enjoyable to watch games on television. But I would say the fact that if you start your season and you know your team is going to stink no matter what, it's hard to be invested.
Yes.
So, you know, people in Kansas City are starting to invest. Is it 20, you know, are we looking at 2015? Are we looking back to where they were, you know, then? I don't know. But, they're in it right now. And so, yeah, more power to them.
Maury Brown is with us to talk baseball, trade deadline, and what's to come still in this 2024 season from Portland, Oregon, working for Forbes. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Before I let you go, you talked about Yankees. We know the Orioles are coming off a 100-win season. The Red Sox are still hanging around, despite what the Rays and Blue Jays did. What do you make of the AL East at this point?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with the Orioles on this one. Look, they didn't do anything spectacular at the deadline, but they certainly didn't hurt themselves, and they bolstered themselves. They didn't just sit on their hands. They went out and tried to get some pieces to basically help with pitching, and I like what that, you know, I like what they have done. The Yankees are always this weird question. Chisholm, like, seems like the core piece, so how he does it third will be an interesting thing to see. They continue to have issues around injury, and they have this weird dynamic where on paper they should absolutely be destroying everybody. And for whatever reason, they don't. People want to lay it on Aaron Judge. They want to lay it on Brian Cashman. I can't lay it entirely on Aaron Judge. Brian Cashman continues to be running the show there for the longest period of time. So look, if the Yankees don't do something, I say every year that if something doesn't happen, heads are going to roll and then nothing happens. So I think the Yankees are in a real predicament here. But then I've been saying this for a while. Hal Steinbrenner is not his dad. I mean, George would have fired everybody and their brother at this point. But the game has largely changed. I think that, again, when it was just largely the Yankees and the Red Sox that had all the financial ump, now that's changed. Now it's the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Red Sox and the Phillies. You know, it just goes round and round where the teams in the top third in payroll. And the Astros are another one, obviously. The teams in the top third of payroll are the ones that are likely to win the World Series. It's no longer the ones that completely outbuy everybody. And so the Yankees will be over the luxury tax threshold again. And I think that they are going to really have to put up a serious dogfight with the Orioles to be in. Right now, I'm going to bank on the Orioles winning the division.
Good stuff with Maury Brown. You can find him on Twix at Bizball, B-I-Z-B-A-L-L, Maury. And he's a senior contributor for Forbes, helping us break down the trade deadline. And he says it was great, so you can take the poll on his account. It's good to talk to you, Maury. Thanks so much for a couple of minutes.
All right, Amy, you take care. Have a great evening.
Oh, yeah. So much to digest, so much to process. And we'll see. He makes a great point that you don't really know how a lot of these moves will pan out in these next days and weeks. It takes a little time. Although I do think about the Angels last season when they decided they would go all in their attempts to keep Shohei Ohtani beyond that free agent period. So keep him beyond 2023. And they bring in Lucas Giolito, right? And that blew up in their faces royally. That was a disaster. There was another hitter they brought in, too, that also didn't really pan out. So they did go heavy metal to the pedal, heavy pedal to the metal, if you will. And they absolutely did try to build a team that would win or that could compete and make some noise. But it wasn't too long after the deadline that they started to go through what is generally their second half decline. It seems like it happens all the time. And obviously, Ohtani ended up leaving for the Dodgers and maybe would have otherwise. So we don't know if these moves will pan out. They could not. I mean, there have been some cases where we've seen guys change teams at the deadline and it sparked their new clubs to a World Series. It happened with the Astros. It happened with the Cubs going back to, was it 16 when the Cubs won? So yeah, it definitely has happened in the past, but there's no surefire guarantee. And as for the teams that collected a bunch of prospects like the Rays, what does this mean for them down the road as well? So we will just wait it out together. I mean, we got nothing but time. That's not even true. It's a crazy chaos, but maybe we'll look back at this and we'll see. You can even lie and say, I told you they shouldn't have done that, or I told you that that was the right move. I knew it, because hindsight is 2020. Online at Amy After Hours. That's our show account. Also on our Facebook page, there is a spot up now where you can send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. And I can see Manny is already scribbling furiously. Got a lot of questions down already. Now be selective. You want to be selective with your questions. All right, let's see. Coming up.
It's like picking your favorite child.
Is it? Is it that serious?
Yes, 100%. Oh, me, who okay, is absolutely childish. That's my opinion right now on Ask Amy Anything.
Nice. Well, you better pose some serious questions because he is taking this 100% seriously. This is dire stuff, peeps.
Overprepared over here.
Always. Like I said, I don't even think there's any such thing as overprepared. So you send your questions. You got another hour and 15 minutes. I've still got a I've still got a sports minute. Speaking of old habits, die hard. All right, straight ahead, Coco Gauff ends up in tears before she bows out of the Olympics in Paris. It was tough to watch, and you can hear it and hear the angst in her voice, so we'll let you do that if you didn't see what happened with the 20-year-old American flag bearer. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
Andy Murray, he is fired up. If you have not seen the videos or even the still photos of Andy Murray and his partner Dan Evans celebrating as they continue to tear it up in doubles, and they're underdogs. They're taking out teams that are ranked higher or seeded higher than they are. But man, just the ferocity and the intensity, treating it like it's a grand slam. And this is amazing because with every win, Andy Murray extends his career just one more match. Not a guy who played a ton of doubles during his pro career, but it's kind of cool to see he and his partner and the fans who are just all about him continuing on, because he has indicated he'll retire as soon as this run in the Olympics is done. All of our calls on NBC. And this is where we get the next piece of audio that we want to share with you. Coco Gauff was seated number 2 in women's singles at the Olympics. Now, she's also competing in mixed doubles, and she and partner Taylor Fritz did in fact advance. And she's competing with Jessica Pegula as well in the women's doubles. And so there's still a lot on the line for her. But in singles, she had lost the first set in a tiebreak on Tuesday and then was up big in the second set. So maybe having to force this to a third set. And there's a moment, well, she starts to kind of lose her grip on this set anyway. And so she wasn't ahead at the time that it happened, but it was later in this particular set. And there's a disputed call that she takes to the chair umpire. She gets really upset, actually not that different from what happened at the French Open on the same court, the same venue, going back to her semifinal match just a couple of months ago. So anyway, there was a ball that she hit and her opponent returned it. It landed near the baseline. The judge that is right there, who's supposed to make the call, indicated that the shot was out. Because she heard the judge call the ball out, she did not play it, right? So she didn't return that ball thinking that it was out. I think she may have flailed at it, but just kind of hit it out, you know, out of a way, just kind of hit it back across the other side, but it was way out of the margins. So she didn't bother to keep the ball in play. And then as the chair umpire reverses the call and says, no, it was actually in, Gauff ends up losing the point because she didn't bother to keep it in play. So see what I'm saying? She heard the line judge. The judge calls it out. So she just kind of lets that particular rally be done. And then the chair umpire reverses it. And she's like, no way. That's not fair. I reacted to what the line judge was saying. Those are the rules. So she got really fired up, really upset. And you can hear her as, you know, we kind of bring back some of this audio. But it's unfortunate because, not just because she lost, because again, this point may not have changed the outcome. She'd started to kind of lose some control there in the second set anyway, but just that she gets so upset and feels like she's kind of alone on her island.
You have to understand, he called it out before I hit. It wasn't a fastball. The ball went like this. And then before he called it out, so I let up on my swing and missed the ball in that.
But that is correct.
But it what's the rule? It's not even a millisecond. He called it before I hit the ball. I can understand if it was the same time. If it's the same time, then yeah, but it was before. It's not even a perception. It's the rule. But I always have to advocate for myself.
So you can hear her get really upset and she started to cry. And when the match was over, she walks off the court quickly and she's still in tears. So I feel for her. She's 20 years old, right? And there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that goes into this, and an opportunity for her to finally compete in the Olympics after it, missing out on Tokyo because of COVID. And so I understand the emotion. In no way will you ever get me to look down on someone for being emotional, because I am an emotional girl without a doubt. And so I understand the emotion. At the same time, that's not why she lost. She was up big in the opening set and wasted a couple of set points before that one went to a tiebreaker. So she had an opportunity in the first set and then had an opportunity in the second set to try to even the score, and really missed a bunch of opportunities there as well. And so it's as much as there are times, right, sports fans, where we like to point to an official who screwed up, a ref who made the wrong call, and say that's the reason why our favorite team or one of our favorite athletes got screwed. That's just not, it's not accurate in this particular case. But I do feel for her because it was hard to watch. It was hard to hear. And she also made this comment. So I read some of the quotes from her. We looked for audio, by the way, post-match audio, and just couldn't find any. It's just not readily available. But I did see a quote for her where she said, usually afterward, they apologize. So it's kind of frustrating. The sorry doesn't help you once the match is over. I can't say I would have won the match if I would have won that point. However, she was really frustrated, feeling like this was the second time it happened. You kind of hear her there on NBC where she indicates that this just happened to me in July and now it's happening to me again. So yeah, I understand. I feel the emotion, and it's tough when it's the Olympics because they only come around every 4 years and you have no idea what might be happening in her life or where she might be in 4 years. But again, the good news is she's still alive in mixed doubles with Taylor, and she's still alive in women's doubles with Jessica Pegula. And so I am still hoping for her that she will win a gold medal, even if it's not in singles. But yeah, that had to be extremely frustrating and just a tough day for Coco all around. Online at A-Law Radio, and also our show account at Amy After Hours, where you can find that spot to ask Amy anything. Also on our Facebook page, which, oh my gosh, wait until I tell you my experience with Facebook on Tuesday morning. And honestly, hearing from some of my friends, I actually don't think it's that rare anymore, but it kind of blew me away. So I tell you all the time that Facebook is the devil, and oh, right, it's getting worse. It's getting worse. Hi, Marco.
Sorry, no point of reference.
No, you're not on Facebook?
Never have.
What did Bill Belichick call it? MySpace or MyFace? MyFace? Interspace? Something like that.
I forget exactly what it was.
Instabook, Instabook, FaceChat was one of them. I remember FaceChat for fact.
Oh, man, it's going to be so weird to not see him on the sidelines with the Patriots. So they've got bigger problems.
Yeah, but I feel
right
like we're
going to
see his face a lot more this year than not on
well,
the
we're
sideline.
Going to hear his voice a yeah. lot more than we Saban. Were used to.
Yeah, he's going to be all over the place.
All right, good to have you with us. 855-212-4227. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Marco.
Behind the beach. Oh, it's fantastic. What a wonderful goal. Special times, special moments. The USA lead, Georgi Mihailovic, a wonderful free kick. But the USA coming forward now. Paredes! What a beautifully worked goal to make it 2-0. Paredes. What a space for a shot. Powered home for 3-0 for the USA. Win the group with three straight wins at Go New Zealand. On go with the USA. The US men are on the march to Paris into the quarterfinals for the first time in 24 years.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
Wow, what are you doing, US soccer? But not just that, is the other US soccer. The national team, USMNT, is that U.S. soccer roster? The one without a coach, you know that one? Are they paying attention to what's going on in France, where the U23 team is headed to Paris because they've reached the knockout stage for the first time in 24 years? Remember, they hadn't even qualified for the games in more than, oh gosh, it's been the last three, right? And so for them to be part of the Olympics is one thing. For them to get second place in their group stage and set up a match with Morocco in the quarterfinals, phenomenal. And so the stakes are getting higher and the intensity is increasing and getting ever more noticeable back home. Yeah, U.S. men's soccer. Huh. But then every time I say it, I think about the other team, the one that's supposed to be competing in the World Cup, and thinking, shoot, it's 2 years away. Is it too late for a shakedown? They don't even have a coach. Who's coaching this team, for heaven's sakes? Awesome. Congratulations to the Americans who are into the quarterfinals, the knockout stage of the Olympics, if you will. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. If you've not been paying attention to anything else tonight, the Simone Biles floor routine is just about to re-air on NBC. So she was the last one to go for Team USA. In fact, this was the last rotation for them. I just, during the break and the update with Marco, had a chance to see Suni Lee and then Jordan Chiles, who crushed her floor routine.
Yeah, we did it.
Sass and power and just an explosive run of tumbles. It was phenomenal. Anyway, she danced off the floor when she was done, and her teammate Suni is jumping up and down cheering. Simone trying to stay a little more focused, but yeah, the Americans knew at that point that they were going to be gold medalists again.
I'm so happy right now.
And so for Simone Biles, all that was left really was for just to her to go out there and enjoy it. And I love that she competed so freely and with a big smile on her face, and that you could tell she's healthy, both physically and mentally. I know people were worried about the calf, but she said that wasn't anything at all. And it didn't look as though it bothered her or hindered her.
All good. As long as we're resting it and making sure it's okay at the end of the day, each and every day we're taking one step at a time and we're going to keep pushing.
Now, she is still competing, coming up in the all-around final for the women on Thursday. Both she and Suni will compete. Remember, Suni's the reigning Olympic gold medalist in that event. The door left open when Simone Biles had to bow out in Tokyo. It's kind of sucky, too. If you don't know the rule, it's this obscure rule, but it has affected the Americans for years. You cannot have more than two athletes per country compete in the all-around. So even though Jordan had the fourth highest scores in qualifying, because above her are Simone and Suni, she can't compete in the all-around, which is kind of stinky, right? It should be the top eight. I don't care how many people come from the same country. So unfortunately, she's not able to compete. Now, she will have event finals, but the individual all-around, that comes up on Thursday, and we'll see Simone and Suni again. So yeah, important for them to make sure she's resting that calf in between. But I can imagine right now they're feeling no pain and they are walking on air.
Yeah, we did it.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We'll get
I'm so happy right now.
More of the Olympics coming up. I love what Suni had to say about just the euphoria, the excitement. And I think too, anytime you go through adversity, and in her case, she had the kidney disease and the health issues for such a long time, it kept her from competing, kept her from training. And so she had a different type of comeback than Simone, but their stories are incredible, and so proud of them as they secure gold on their redemption tour. And then you've got the men too, right? So Steven Nedorosic, he was a guest on the Today Show. All of a sudden, he has become not just a meme, but a household name. I told you, he's the Carrie Strug of these Olympics. And so he's got a lot of newfound fame and popularity based on his glasses and his memes and everything else for Team USA. But I say enjoy it. This is the type of thing that only comes around once every 4 years, and maybe never again if you're a kind of a one-time gymnast. Manny is giving me some strange looks.
I lost it. Where'd it go?
I don't know. It's cut number 40.
Yeah.
Okay. It's cut number 40, but it's not in there, so we'll find it at some other point. We'll hear from Steven. But yeah, he's right now a household name himself, and the men's gymnastics team, they were at a watch party, and they were following the women, of course, and cheering for them, getting all excited. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. If you want to send your questions for Ask Amy Anything, it comes up inside of an hour from now, about 45 minutes from now. And Manny has shown me his list of questions. He's already got them written out, so he'll be ready to go. But I made sure that he knows you still have time. So he's going to keep checking online at Amy After Hours, as well as on our Facebook page. All right. So speaking of Facebook, this is crazy. I don't go on it very often, my personal account. In fact, my husband and I are not friends. I'm not connected with any of my husband's family. Just, I don't use it very often. My mom will look at it a bunch because we are connected to not just family members around the country, but a lot of them in Northeast Ohio, which is where she spent the majority of her life. But also some friends of mine from high school, a few from college, colleagues around the country. But I really don't spend a lot of time on it. I took my birthday off it, for heaven's sakes, because I just, yeah. If you know me and you have my number, let's get in touch that way. It's kind of a personal pet peeve. But I also can't stand the way that Facebook sets up its algorithms. We've been burned a bunch of times on our show page, and so it drives me berserk that they will control what you see and what you don't see. And the algorithms are such that they will send you more and more of what they think you want to see based on your likes and your views in the past. So get this. On Tuesday morning, I'm sitting at breakfast and I was scrolling. I just thought I'd mindlessly, I was tired. I was eating breakfast and Bob and I sit there and we do a couple of word games and we scroll whatever on our phones. And so it's just kind of a way to unwind. So scrolling on my phone and I realized that I wasn't seeing any posts from family or friends or people I actually know. And so I started counting. You guys, between the suggested pages, a lot of it's Star Wars because I like Star Wars stuff, some animal videos as well, between the ads and then a bunch of political junk, I stopped counting at 50 consecutive posts without seeing even one post from someone I was personally connected to. 50. I stopped counting at 50 ads and suggested posts and accounts that I'm not connected to, that I've not followed in the past, 50 of them. And I just stopped at that point. I didn't see anything from the people that I actually want to see their posts, their life updates, their photos. No, it was all junk. It was all stuff that the Facebook algorithm was sending me. 50 consecutive posts. I scrolled for about 4 minutes and saw nothing from anyone that I actually know. That's what's happening online. It sucks. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.